Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, May 25th, 2022, and this is episode 253 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We're coming to you live on Facebook. Join us every week. We usually record on Mondays. This week we had some scheduling conflicts, so we're going now here on a Wednesday. But I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today is Eric Nathanson, man. Hey, how you feeling about the last couple days? It was looking pretty bleak there, wasn't it?
This is why we waited to record. You shouldn't have mentioned scheduling conflicts. We just said, you know, this Mets series feels a little wonky, so let's wait until it's over till we want to talk to each other. I'm just basking in the glow of what's going on the last two nights with the Giants. It's good to finally feel good about them after such a rough stretch of baseball, because it was ugly over there for a while. But it was fun. The adrenaline last night, the game last night, that's one we're going to be talking about for years. So, you know, I didn't mean to kick off with it, but I mean, right away, that's the first place my head goes to. What a night, what a weekend for week for Jock. I mean, we've never seen anything like this before. It's been kind of crazy. Jock with three home runs, first Giant to do it in Oracle in the regular season ever. You were at the only other time a Giant had done it at Oracle, so it's kind of crazy to have something like that happen. So I'm kind of geeked about them again. Like, hey, maybe this is the start of something else, you know? All those bad feelings, they're gone. I'm thrilled to record. If we recorded Monday, it might have been like, oh man, but
You know,
at least we got this going for us.
It's so crazy because you and I were texting back and forth a little bit last night. And yeah, I put it in the notes. I wanted to lead off with last night's game. It's one of those games where, you know, growing up and watching like WGN or TBS during a rain delay, they'd put on some like classic Cubs or Braves game. I swear, this is one of those games that the Giants are going to play during a rain delay. Usually it's a TV infomercial spot instead, but if they were to play a classic game, this would be one that they're going to play 20 years from now.
It was probably, you know, it was the kind of game too where like all of Twitter, you notice all the baseball world started watching because it was a long game, a lot of hits. I mean, 17 hits or something like that in the eighth inning alone last night. That's just ridiculous. We've never seen, I don't think I've ever seen a game like that in my entire life. I really don't. And I'm so glad the Giants came out on top and then followed it with a steamroller over the first couple innings today, so that they didn't lose their mojo, because it was scary there for a while last night. This we could be talking about a 7-game losing streak right now, just as well as we're talking about taking 2 of 3 from the Mets.
Yeah, just to quickly recap, and I'll play highlights later of this game, but just for those of you that somehow missed this game or somehow missed the recap or Twitter or something, I mean, first of all, you might be living under a rock if you actually missed this, because if you're listening to this podcast, you're a big fan of the Giants and you know what happened. But that said, the Giants jumped out to an 8-2 lead, and it looked like they were going to cruise to victory. Jock Peterson at that point had already hit two home runs, and that was when the eighth inning happened, and just everything unraveled for Tyler Rogers. He was hit pretty hard in the beginning of the inning. I think the first four hits were pretty damn hard. Then he had one that went off of Padlo's chest, and Crawford couldn't get it. There was one, like, 13 hopper up the middle that got through. There was another infield hit. So, you know, some of those, it's like, well, they weren't scalded. But here's the reality. We talked about this pre-show. Tyler Rogers is not missing bats lately. And when you put the ball in play, things happen, right? I mean, when you got the tying run on second or third late in the game, you're like, just get the ball in play. You never know what can happen. And that's exactly what happened that inning. Of course, the Mets went on to score freaking 7 runs in the inning, and then jumped ahead after Francisco Lindor hit that triple down the line, which was a generous triple considering Jock Peterson had a problem with it in the corner. I mean, you can't really assign an error because it bounced
off in a weird place.
But
he had such a play during one of his greatest games. It's just kind of weird how that happens.
But you had an interesting stat about Tyler Rogers and strikeouts, right?
Oh, he hasn't struck anybody out in the last 10 game, five appearances. You talk about, there it is right here. He's only struck out one batter this month. He's got three on the entire season. Nope, I'm sorry. He's got six. If the ball's, you know, you put the ball in play, things happen. It's the same old conversation about it. And Tyler Rogers is giving up the weakest contact of his career. The exit velocity, the average exit velocity he's giving up is 81.8 miles an hour. It's 4 miles an hour less than last year or any other year he's done. But for some reason, the batting average against him is like is way high. Where did it go? Is higher, and the expected batting average is actually lower. It's like a difference of 240 to 340. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
But because they're putting the ball in play, and because the shift is on and balls squirt in different directions, we saw it with that one play that Padlo at third. You know, the ball kind of was squirting on him towards, you know, towards him and away from him at the same time. And that's what happens when you got a guy who spins it the way he does and bats making weak contact. So, you know, it makes for tough appearances sometimes, but he never gets hit hard. But I'm personally starting to get frustrated in seeing the balls just always going into play and just barely finding that hole against Rogers, or it's just barely hit soft enough. So what's the difference? If it's hit too soft or too hard, if the guy's getting on base, the guy's getting on base, and that's a problem.
That's
you know what I mean?
Problem.
Like, yeah. We talk about it all the time, like, oh my God, he's giving up hard contact. You know, well, yeah, obviously that's going to lead to more hits. But if Rogers is giving up base runners, what's going on? So it was frustrating to watch him to have to go through that. And it's kind of nice to see that the Giants picked him up. You know, I can't imagine feeling like you totally blew it for the entire team. And then, you know, oh my God, Jock and Crawford, you know, saved my ass.
Yeah, that was incredible. So, of course, Jock Peterson, and the Giants, excuse me, found themselves suddenly down, 11-8, I guess it was at that point.
Yeah.
And then Jock Peterson came up and ripped his third home run of the night, a three-run bomb that was into McCovey Cove for a splash hit, tied the game at 11. Everybody is just going crazy. That was the seventh RBI of the game. Everybody's like, the first three-homer game at Oracle since Panda, blah, blah, blah. And then the top of the ninth, unfortunately, the Mets did get a triple and a sacrifice fly to go up, and you're thinking it's the end, especially since the bottom of the ninth, they got two outs right away, and you're like, damn it, you know, they got so close, but they put a little two-out rally with their with your moniker there, a bunch of two-out hits. Well, they had a walk, a hit, then Mr. Peterson came up again, and Gabe Kapler, after the game, was quoted as saying all he wanted to do was get Peterson up again. He just wanted him to get up again. Let's get Jock up again.
Can you believe he admitted that?
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy that he admitted that?
I mean, you know, go with the hot hand, right? Let's just get the guy up. And so with two outs, they got two more guys on. Jock rips a single up the middle, hit it hard. He didn't need to hit it. In fact, his post-game comments, we'll talk about that with Barry Bonds later. He knew that he didn't have to swing for the fences. He was just trying to keep calm, swing at his pitch. So, of course, that ties the game, and then Brandon Crawford on the next at-bat squeaks one through the left side just slow enough to allow Darren Ruff to score, because we all know that Ruff is on the move. He's not very fast, and he got in there for the winning run. So just an incredible comeback, a game for the ages. It was a lot of fun.
Is that two walk-offs this year? Have they had more than that? Because Ruff, I know, on opening day was on the move. That's where that comes from. And then yesterday, it's just funny that Ruff would be the guy to score the final run both times.
Yeah, I think
yesterday was just...
I know it was their first walk-off since April. I don't know if it was that game or if they've had three walk-offs. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into that. But that was a lot of fun. And then Jock continues it today. His first at-bat, he rips his fourth home run in seven at-bats, dude. I mean, he finishes with eight RBIs the last game, then has two more this... He is the hottest hitter on the planet right now.
And it's on inside fastballs. Okay, so it was, you know, we mentioned that he was talking to Bonds. It's really hard for a hitter to get their hands in, especially a power hitter, because they like to extend their hands to meet the ball with as much force behind it. But if you have to pull your hands in to cover that inside pitch at about waist-high, belly-high location, it makes it very, very tough to get all your strength behind it. And to have him hit the one today and the last one yesterday out in that exact fashion, they were Bonzian. They really, really kind of were. It was awesome to see that the tying one, too, last night went into the water. And then today, like, when he hit it, it was just a pure muscle job. Like, Jock's a big boy, and he can hit the ball far. He's doing what they wanted. You said it today. I think they've got their $6 million worth already, and I absolutely agree. Is it $6
million? Yeah, $6 million. That's it. I mean, it just seems like it seemed like a deal when they signed him. I was like, I'm surprised Jock Peterson is signing for that little considering the market. And here he is sitting on 11 home runs near the end of May. I mean, clearly he's on pace for, you know, 35, 40 home runs. I'm not saying he's going to get there, but at this production level, he's clearly worth the $6 million. That's a steal.
First,
right now.
Will he be the first Giant in the Derby since Bonds?
Good question. Ooh, man, I didn't even think about that, especially since the game's at Dodger Stadium. There's something kind of about that.
I didn't
even
think about that.
Yeah, wow. There's a bit of an angle there, right? For him to go back to where he kind of exploded, you know, kind of became a household name or at least close to it. That'd be something. Well, I mean, look.
Last time,
if he's sitting on like 17, 18, 19 home runs by the All-Star break, which he should be at this pace. I don't see why he wouldn't at least be invited. You know, they invite a lot of these guys kind of in sequential order, but it depends on how much star power accepts invites ahead of him. But that would be cool to see. I didn't even think
it
about
really
that.
Would.
But yeah, he's on a tear right now. The Giants went out there again today and handled business. They scored 5 in the first and 4 in the second, and then cruised to a 9-3 victory. They hit 4 home runs today, another one by Jock, which I mentioned. And then you had Yaz, and then Longo hit 2. So it was good to see him get on the board.
Yeah, his swing was finally coming around this last week. He sat out yesterday's crazy-ass game with some shoulder soreness, and it was like, oh, no, we're going to talk about injuries and list off again another starting 9 for the Giants. And it was like, oh, no, Longo's going to be on the shelf with them too. But thankfully he came back today, and he set the tone with his homer. His first homer in the game in the first inning just kind of told Zispucky or whatever the guy's name was,
yeah,
like, see you later,
name.
Buddy. You're just some kid from somewhere. You're getting your ass handed to you. Somebody equated him to the Giants version of Tyler Beedy. He's apparently some guy that was drafted high and they really thought really highly of, but he's never been able to put it together. And the Giants destroyed him today. Longoria, you know, we need him back because they beat a left-handed pitcher today, which has been something that's been more of a struggle. They are 6-5, I think, against left-handed starters this year, but it just stands out that they struggle more against left-handers. So especially having Jock and Yaz come through against the lefty is pretty good. Gabe said it before the game today. He had to put Jock in the lineup. It was self-preservation. And I get it because that locker room, that clubhouse would have killed him. If he didn't have Jock,
are you kidding me? Yeah, yeah. Numbers be splits be damned. The dude hit 3 bombs and 8 RBI. You put him in. I'm sorry, you put him in. My lord,
it's Bochy rules when it comes to that.
Yeah, no, it's Bochy rules. Yeah, he always said, you know, if you hit a home run or 2 home runs, you're always in the next day lineup. But not always with 1 home run. That was the distinction, which was I thought was interesting. In fact, that was brought up by a couple of Giants a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember who it was. It wasn't Sean S. Yeah, it was. It was Sean Estes. He was getting interviewed, and they were talking about some of the guys having a home run, why he wasn't in the lineup the next day. And he's like, yeah, that was a rule by Boch. And then he looked back, he thought back to it, and he's like, you know, actually, there were a couple of exceptions. I remember being around the clubhouse where a player would complain, going, Boch, I hit a bomb last night. Why am I not in? He's like, yeah, well, you know, when you hit a few more, you know, maybe that rule will apply to you. But 2 was automatic. So 2 is automatic. And 3, I mean, come on. That's just
you can't
go back on that. You know, splits be damned.
Who's seen the ball better than Jock? I mean, he didn't really carry them, but he carried them the last 2 days. Everything he did was a spark.
Yeah, his back must hurt right now because he's doing a lot of heavy lifting. And that was also a franchise record for the New York Mets, the most runs ever scored in a regular season loss. So that's kind of nice.
Only two teams have never scored 12 and lost a game in baseball history now, and it is the D-backs and Rays, which are 2 expansion franchises
exactly.
From 1998.
So, yeah, so that makes sense. And even the Mets kind of, you know, 69 or 62, whenever they came in to being, you know, they were kind of short on that list as well. There's a nice little article, and you see these quotes elsewhere as well by Alex Pavlovich, of course, talking about Jock Peterson having that conversation with Barry Bonds. And apparently it's a very long conversation. He opens up the article saying that Jock Peterson looked at the clock and was like, oh crap, it's 6:25, and he had 20 minutes to go put his uniform on and get out on the field because he was engrossed in Mike Murphy's office talking with Barry Bonds. And he said, quote, that's probably the best hitting conversation I've ever had. I mean, look, he grew up, he's from Palo Alto, right? He grew up just south of Oracle Park, a big Giants fan and a huge Barry Bonds fan. I mean, that would be something, you know, to be in that clubhouse now. And I know he's been around stars for quite a bit of time now. He's probably less starstruck, but still to be able to just talk shop with one of the greatest hitters of all time and one of his idols. But it really helped, and he said it really helped him calm down for the game itself, but also that ninth inning at bat, which was crucial to get that tying run in. So that, I don't know, that was a pretty good little article. I was looking for another quote here, but he said, quote, it was just talking, freeing up the mind, getting rid of distractions, Peterson said. I've talked to great hitters before, and they're not as in-depth as him. Obviously, the game came very easy for him, but he's also a master inside the ears at being able to stay focused. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty cool, man. So, yeah, Twitter blew up and said, so is Barry Bonds going to be giving pregame talks to everyone now? I mean, like, let's do it.
He should. He should come every series, just at the start of every series, swing by the ballpark, and he and Jock and Yaz can chill out, maybe get Crawford in there, all the left-handed power hitters.
Yeah, and here's that quote by Cap. He said, when the night started, it was like, let's just try to get to Jock. So there it is, kind of just admitting, like, yeah, I just wanted to get to him, see what he could do, basically. So a hell of a performance, one for the ages. And one thing I was going to say is normally I have to go into work on Tuesday and Wednesday right now, and I can't usually cover games because of the schedule and being in Monterey. This week I originally was going to work Monday and Wednesday, and I really was going to go to Tuesday night's game. And it turned out our director came in. We had an all-hands meeting on Tuesday, so I had to switch my Wednesday to a Tuesday. I had to shift everything back a day. Otherwise, I might have seen both three homer performances at Oracle Park. That would have been incredible, dude. Holy crap.
That would have been select company.
Oh, man.
That's amazing.
That would have been incredible. But the Giants, I don't know how or why or what the hell is going on, but they are now 12-2 in those godforsaken City Connect uniforms. 12-1 when you omit the Friday night snafu. And the only reason they wore the City Connects on that Friday was because the shipping issues they've had. They haven't been able to get those orange jerseys in this year.
Wow. I didn't realize that was the reason.
Yeah.
I love the City Connects. I will always love the City Connects. You got to respect the City Connect at this point. There is voodoo in the City Connect uniforms. If it's not more apparent after last night, I don't know when it'll ever be apparent to people.
I don't know what to say.
The City Connects jerseys are awesome.
The City Connects are very, they have to be respected. They have to be feared. They do. The power of the orange creamsicle. I don't know. I don't know what to say. They're just, but, you know, it's kind of like certain baseball players that you've seen over the years that really do have ugly swings, but they're perennial all-stars, you know? It's like, it doesn't look pretty, but it's working. So you got to respect it, you know?
Gets the job done. Yeah.
It gets the job done. Those. So yeah, the Giants haven't been doing the best. Very mediocre lately. They're 4-5 since we recorded last Monday. Of course, they had that 5-game losing streak sandwiched by those two wins streaks, I guess. The sweep by the Padres, man, at home, that's what really hurt in the middle of that 5-gamer. I mean, that really separated them from the Padres, unfortunately. I mean, even if you win one of those games, you know, it's a 2-game swing, and it doesn't hurt as bad. But a 3-game sweep is just – intra-division is just not good. But right now they stand at 24-19, 5 games above 500. L.A. did just lose, and I'm looking over at the live score. And did the Padres lose?
They lost.
Yes, they did. The Padres just lost. Okay, so the Giants have gamed on both teams today. I think the Padres are now 3.5 ahead of the Giants. So, hey, look, 5 games back in May is not a huge deal. They've been there before, but you are dealing with the Los Angeles Dodgers. You know, they are really the hottest team in baseball. They're the best team in baseball right now. They're in the top 3, 4, 5 in every category, both offensively and pitching. I mean, they're just killing it right now with that all-star team, with all that money, and it just sucks to just see them buy this stuff, but... Hey, look, you know, the Giants overcame it last year, beating them by a game, and they almost got them in the playoffs. And this year with expanded playoffs, that's all you need to do is you get your foot in the door, because I admit, you know, it's still very possible they did it last year. It's going to be really hard to win 107 again, and it might take that to beat the Dodgers and win the West, right? Even if the Giants won 95, it's not going to win the West. It's not. And then you throw the Padres into the mix, which, again, the Padres usually Padre and fade down the stretch. But they're playing up to their potential right now. And if that sustains itself, you're going to have a two or maybe three-horse race at the end. And look, my attitude is division would be great. You get to get the first-round bye. Well, actually, you only get the first-round bye if you're the number one seed. So even if you win the division, it's not even a guarantee of the first-round bye. As long as you get your foot in the door. Oh, it's a top two?
Yeah, because then the third division winner plays the worst wild card. So that would be, at the moment, that would be Milwaukee against St. Louis.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, there's six teams that qualify, yeah.
Right, and the Giants and Padres would be facing off right now, but it would be in the Padres' home park because they would be the number one wild card and have a better record than the Giants at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So you have the third division winner and then the three wild cards face off in that first round. But the better seed gets all three games at their park, which that is a significant advantage, I have to admit. But I think it's better than a one-game wild card playoff, so because anything could happen there. So look, if the Giants get their foot in the door, anything can happen. And who knows? You know, they could easily... You know, if they don't win the West, they could easily get the number, you know, one or two wild card spot, and you know, maybe get home field advantage for that first round, which would be nice. But they're 10-12 in May, and this is the other interesting thing: they finished every month in 2021 with a winning percentage of 600 or better, and they started this year doing the same in April, going 14-7 for a 667 winning percentage. So they had a streak of seven consecutive months of playing 600 or better ball. I mean, that to me, Eric, is like so insanely ridiculous for any baseball team to do that. But officially, May will be the first month they do not finish above 600. It is just impossible to do so. In fact, you pointed out at 10-12, they have to go 4-1 over their last five to have a winning record for the month of May. So,
yeah. And then I would think that, August of 2020 would be the last time they had a losing record for a month, probably. Because I think they broke even or were a little better September last year. I posed this question. It's so funny. I posed this question on May 4th to Giants Chatter. I was looking at the schedule and I said the Giants hadn't been below 600 for a month since September 2020. So it was September. Between all the injuries and COVID and a tough schedule, will they finally dip below? And 18 people said yes, they were realistic, and only 8 people said no, which is good to see that Giants fans were realistic about it. And we talked about it. It's just a tough schedule right now. The Padres are a really good team. Manny Machado, really freaking good. Oh, Eric Hosmer, Machado's just otherworldly this year. It's so funny. You know, Miguel Cabrera got his 3,000th hit this year, and you try to think about right-handed hitters that remind you of a guy like him who's a pure hitter. Machado always seems to come to my mind, and he's really, like, coming through with that this year.
Yeah.
And so the Padres are a really good team, and it made this past week in this homestand tough for them. It's just after that Colorado loss to end that series last week, you know, where it looked like, okay, the Giants might steamroll to a sweep in Coors and win 13 straight against the Rockies. They lost that game to the Rockies, and then they got swept by the Padres, and it was just kind of an avalanche of crap. And it was not a good stretch just back then. It really wasn't. But, you know, the first time they've ever fallen below 500 since freaking 2020 is an amazing stat. I think only the Dodgers are probably the only team that is anywhere near that. But I would assume the Dodgers have been over 500 for like 38 months straight.
Something like that. I mean, my Lord, they won, you know, whatever, 7 or 8 division titles in a row before they lost one last year, going 106 wins, which tied their franchise record anyway. So it's kind of like they've won 9 in a row. So, yeah, their record every month has got to be pretty sick. I'm sure they had one in there, something like that.
I mean,
but
you would hope. I mean, they had a bad stretch when the Giants were putting together some wins last week, a week and a half ago. And then that was the problem with this week. Dodgers won 7 straight, and the Padres were the team to sweep the Giants. That's really put them behind the eight ball right now. So,
yeah, those three teams were all within a couple of games. And then, the Dodgers win 7-0, Giants lose 5-0, and boom, suddenly that gap appears, and now they find themselves 5 games back within literally a week. I mean, it was quick. It was really, really quick. And I don't expect it to turn around as quickly, because the Dodgers did lose 5 in a row earlier this year, but they're just not going to do that very often. The Giants only lost 5 in a row one time last year. This year, they've already lost 5 in a row two separate times.
In this month.
Yeah, in this month. So out of their 19 losses, 10 of them have come from those two losing streaks. And that's it's not good to be that streaky with those losses. But, I mean, I kind of want to talk about, I mean, why is this happening, Eric? I mean, I looked it up, and obviously we've seen the pitching struggle. We've seen a lot of blowouts lately. The run differential has absolutely plummeted. They used to be one of the league leaders in positive run differential, and now it's back down to about 18 or 19 or something like that, when they were way up at like 75. They've been outscored in the month of May. I think I had the stat right here somewhere, but regardless of that, you know, you look at the run distribution, and it's been very negative this whole month.
14, 13. It was 25 runs heading into today's game, and today was what, 9-3?
Yeah.
So 6 runs, 19 runs. They're minus 19 run differential for the month.
For the month, yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's not so hot. That goes with the losing record. Look, it's their team ERA. It's their pitching. I don't have all the stats here, but let's just give you the classic ERA. For the month of April, their ERA was number 2 or 3 in the league at 2.87. It's exactly – no, I shouldn't say exactly. It's kind of where we expected the Giants to be in terms of ranking. They've been consistent with their pitching in 2021. They came in to this year looking with like a solid rotation and a solid bullpen, and everyone said that was their strength. Well, in May – their team ERA is a major league worst. And we're almost at the end of the month now, Eric. So this isn't like, oh, it's 1 week into the month. 5.94, almost 6 runs a game. The Reds, who, of course, we all know how bad they are this year, for the month of May are second worst at 5.59. So no one's worse than the Giants. That's put their 2.87 from April to a 4.44 for overall, which is 25th in the league, Eric. I mean, they went from like 3rd to 25th so far. So they have one of the worst staffs in the league, statistically speaking, by runs allowed. And LA is sitting at 2.74. I mean, it's significantly
best
better.
Best in baseball, I believe, too.
It is. It's the best in baseball. And, you know, I know there's all the other metrics, too, but we're just going to use that for right now. The relief and starters, if you thought the relief was worse, yeah, they're a little bit worse. But they're pretty close. Starters are at 4.33. Relief is at 4.54. So within a, you know what, 2/10 of a run of each other. So they're pretty much even Steven. So both ends of the pitching spectrum really are to blame for this. It's just not good. And I got to say, the only thing that's really saving the Giants right now, which was kind of case in point last night and then again today, is the Giants have scored the second most runs and have the second highest runs per game in all of baseball. And who are they behind? The Los Angeles Dodgers, who have the best pitching and the best offense, essentially. They also have the Giants have the fourth best OPS and the third best OBP, which, of course, Farhan really does value. So, look, their hitting is what's making them tread water here in the month of May. If they had average hitting, I mean, I think the Giants would be 4 or 5 more losses in the hole right now.
Yeah, which is crazy to think about because, you know, we're talking about this pre-show and we're going to go through the list of injuries again, and it's mostly hitters. And hitters have been the ones consistently injured. It's not the relievers that are consistently injured on this team. Yet the relievers are the ones and the pitching that are giving it up so far. Like, that's the thing. The relievers, opponents are hitting .262 off them, and it looks to be the highest in baseball. Because they're not walking anybody. They've only walked 61 guys in 174 innings pitched as a reliever. So it's that they're giving up hits inconsistently, and this almost goes all the way back to me being annoyed at Tyler Rogers for giving up contact, but it kind of does, like, stop giving up contact. And that seems to be their biggest flaw this year, and I think that's what's missing is they're not getting the strikeouts as much either, and they're not walking guys. So, you know, a lot of balls are being put in play against this against this relief corps. If they can hammer it down, the offense can carry them. You know, there's some of these games where they're scoring enough runs and the pitcher's putting them in a position to win, and we've just seen the bullpen blow it. You know, you have a guy like Garcia, I think it was, who gave up a homer for the first time since May of last year. I mean, what can you do? You know, that happens. It's baseball. Sometimes you get beat. But, you know, they don't seem to be putting themselves in a position to win. But the hitters are. The hitters have been fantastic. Like, I mean, I'm not saying the new guys getting brought up, aside from Gonzalez, are contributing too much. But, like, every week somebody's hot. It was Casale 2 weeks ago. You know, it's Jock right now. Yaz has been on a tear. He's hitting over, like, 400 over his last nine games. So you're always going to have guys belt carry the team at one point this year. You're always going to have guys carrying them. So it's tough that the relievers are putting them in this position, because we thought pitching is a strength, and it should be. But, you know, so far the bats are. I mean, that's ridiculous that they're, like, neck and neck with the Dodgers for runs scored, and they're five games behind the Dodgers. They should be at least within two, three games at that point.
Yeah, if they had been, you know, kind of hanging in there. Yeah, it's just really frustrating. So what do you think? I mean, I can't put my finger on it. I mean, the pitching revolving door hasn't been as big as the hitter's revolving door, and you just brought that up there in terms of injuries. So aside from lack of missing bats and a high kind of, you know, contact rate, is there anything else you can point to? I just don't see anything that's obvious. I mean, even Carlos Rodon, he only had one bad start, but it was epic, right? Tyler Rogers goes out there and gives up, you know, seven runs in the eighth. I mean, some of these innings have been big. They're allowing bunches of hits to occur together.
Is it fair to question the usage from last year affecting how much the guys are, you know, contributing this year? I think it probably is. I think we could probably look at their usage last year and see guys like Rogers, who pitched 80 games.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he is running into a wall at times. Maybe you need to pussyfoot around with some of these relievers and give them good opportunities, because it's not every reliever. Darlene Garcia has pitched 16 in the third innings and he hasn't given up a run this year. Like, everybody else's ERA is sitting at, you know, Duvall's at 2.6, Brebbia 2.7. So you got some good guys, but Leon's over 3, Littell's over 6, Long's over 3. McGee's ERA is almost 10.
Now Rogers is over 7, right? After last night.
Yeah, it shot up to 7.41 last night. It went from 3 and change to 7.41 in one night. I mean, that's tough. 7 runs in a third of an inning. And, I mean, maybe one of them could have been an error, but
yeah. I mean, still putting it in play. Yeah.
But I wonder if that's why the strikeouts are down for the relievers this year, not just Rogers, you know, him actually notwithstanding. I wonder if that's why strikeouts are down with them this year. Maybe they're a little tired. Maybe they really are. You know, some of them didn't go through a long, arduous season in the past like they did last year. And some of these guys were used a lot more than they've been in the past. If I had anything to point to it, I think that might. I mean, who the hell really knows? I mean, every year is
who the hell really knows? Yeah, I just, you know, you see it with like one or two players at a time. It just seems to be happening to like almost the entire relief corps and a couple of the starters all at once in this month. And so it's like, is there something in the water? Are they not being diagnosed with COVID? Like, what's going on here? Do they need a sports psychologist to come in?
Wood got hammered the other day.
Yeah, and Wood. Yeah, right. Wood got hammered. That's right. Yeah.
He really did. So it's happening to a lot of guys.
Well, let's talk about those injuries. It was funny because 10 days ago when we recorded, we were excited about them basically getting back to full strength or close to it. And then the last 10 days, it's all fallen apart again. Of course, we just spoke about it. It's not really affecting the pitching depth or availability. It's not like they're calling a bunch of these guys up lately. It's been mostly the hitters, and the run production is still steady. So that's, you know, that hasn't been too bad. But you know, they put Disco on the 60-day IL with his ankle inflammation. So, I mean, at first, you know, they kept saying, oh, he'll be ready in a couple weeks. He'll be ready in a couple weeks. And it just, like, kept kicking the can down the road, and now they transferred him to 60-day IL. So that's very concerning. I haven't heard anything recently.
Junis has been fantastic as the fill-in. Again today, he put them in a position to win. I think he's put them in a position to win every time out. I don't think he's given them more than 4 runs in a start. So,
no, I mean,
take your time, Disco. Personally, just take your time, buddy, and make sure you're healed.
Yeah, Junis is like a 2.74 or something like that ERA right now. He's filling in more than admirably as a spot starter. And he's not even a spot starter right now. He is in the rotation. He is part of the rotation until things change. So That's good. So Lamont Wade Jr. came back and then immediately went back on the IL with left knee inflammation. He's been getting...
He's going to be on the IL for a while, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it just sucks because he's getting these injections now for his knee with... I don't even know what it is, but it's some sort of like... it's not stem cell therapy, but it's like a cushioning. Yeah. I'm like, what is that? Are you putting gel in your knee? Like, I don't really understand what it is.
Is it like lubricant or is it like a malleable, like thick substance?
Are they putting silly putty in there? WD-40? Like what is it? I don't know, but it sounded kind of funky. Brandon Belt had a cortisone shot and his knee drained on Sunday. Ugh, so his knee issues are, you know, flaring their ugly face again. So he's back on the 10-day IL. And again, their offense has not suffered. But that said, he is a guy that you just miss over there. I mean, like Darren Ruff last night, I think he would have been safe anyway, but that one play over to first, he dropped the ball, yeah. You know, and it was kind of like, damn, you know, maybe if it was Brandon Belt, maybe he would have gotten the call. I don't know. I didn't see the replay, but, you know, he's so valued, not only defensively, but offensively. And so, you know, he started the year so well again, just like he always does, but the captain or the baby giraffe, whatever you want to call him, getting like injured again.
Availability is a huge thing for a player, and he does not always have that. And it starts a chain reaction. If Belt's not at first, then somebody else has to cover first. So you're then moving another guy from here and another guy from there, and it affects the Giants' defense. And I think we saw that last night and in the seventh inning, and I think we've just seen it in general a lot this season. I mean, it's Belt. The Belt Wars are over. He won them, but...
He definitely won the belt wars, but every time he goes on the IL, you just kind of shake your head and you just keep wishing, like every year, if he could just put together a year where he plays like 140, 150 games, he'd be hitting 30 home runs and having no issues, you know? Really frustrating. But yeah, Austin Slater was another surprise. He was placed on the 10-day injured list as well due to left wrist inflammation. He was placed there a couple of days ago on Monday. Steven Duggar is expected to begin a rehab assignment on June 2nd. I think he's eligible to come off at the end of the month. They definitely miss a little bit of his defense. Kurt Casale is making good progress on the 7-day IL for his concussion. Looks like he can come off that list, probably will this weekend. And, you know, you had that guy that they traded Mauricio Dubon for from the Astros, Michael Papirski. And, I mean, we talked about it. His stats in the minor leagues were not very good. He had low strikeout rate, an okay on-base percentage. But, obviously, his contact rate wasn't very good. He's a longtime minor league player. And, I mean, right now he's 0-for-7 with 4 strikeouts. And I remember, I mean, his first major league at-bat, because he made his major league debut, he looked at 3 straight strikes and just sat down. I was like, I don't think he's ready. I think he was doing okay as catcher. He had trouble throwing guys out, but...
He's got kind of like a noodle arm. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, why is this guy... Maybe he should be a first baseman.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about this guy. Again, a lot of people saw him and are like, I can't believe we traded Dubon for this guy. Dubon's so much better. Again, as a reminder, Doobie was out of options. And
that's
everyone coming off the IL...
straight.
Yeah. All because of that trade, the Doobie curse, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. So they got something instead of nothing. That's basically what happened. And here he is. He's an insurance policy for Casale going down. He's not going to be Bart's replacement, obviously. This might be the only time we see him all year. He might get DFA'd after this for all we know. I have no idea. There was a stat that they were talking about on KMBR today. A writer had put together all of the transactions that Farhan has been responsible for, and apparently it already equates to like 25% of all the transactions ever done in San Francisco history.
Oh my God. Wow.
So, oh my God, I got to dig that up. The number was like 20 or 25%. It was crazy.
There's got to be one a day. I really think there's one a day, or he tries to average one a day every week. It's ridiculous. I've never seen a team make so many transactions. You're totally right. I mean, granted, we didn't have all these news sources back then, but Chad, do you ever remember hearing about some teams making all these moves before in your life? There's no team out there that does what the Giants do right now.
No, he's making more moves than like the guy in my rotisserie fantasy league that always wins it every year, right? Like, I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to research every sleeper and minor leaguer that's about to get called up, right? I don't have, I'm like, who's this guy? And then a month later, he's got 10 bombs. I'm like, how did you know that? You know, I don't, That's what he is, man. He's like, he's, I do wonder, like, does he play, has he ever played in fantasy baseball? I would imagine as a GM, you don't want to do that because you're going to get exposed. You're going to like, but that would be
apparently he's
cool.
Really good at the fantasy football. He was dominating a league and there was all sorts of crap talked between him and Crawford and Belt and stuff heading into the last couple seasons. So I think he mixes it up in that way. I think he won 6-7 years straight or something.
I'm sure he has. I mean, my Lord, if he puts any time into it, he's, wow, that's incredible. And then the Giants are expected to activate Jake McGee on Friday. I mean, I'm cool with putting that off for a while. I don't know about, sorry, I don't mean to be mean.
His 7 point, I mean, you know.
No, 9 point something, one, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. 9.48 or something. He's a one-trick pony. That's, yeah.
He is. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if the injury really had anything to do with his performance right before he went on the IL. But I don't necessarily expect to see much difference. But we'll see. I mean, he's been with the Giants for a couple of years, and he's been fine. I mean, bad here and there, but he's been overall fine. I think maybe he's just crossed that hump in age and everything else, and maybe this is his last year with the Giants. I don't know.
That's what my head's at.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. You want to handle transactions?
Yeah, absolutely. I got them in front of me. So we'll go back to the beginning of the week. Oh, no. When they put Lamont on the 10-day IL, they brought up Luis Gonzalez. Now, you wrote down outfielder Luis Gonzalez here, but we'll talk about the pitcher. And then when Casale
Yeah, it should have been outfield slash pitcher. He's like Shohei, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, he wishes. Although, we'll talk about his pitching in a minute. Luke Williams got designated for assignment with Kirk Casale going down for a concussion because when Casale went down, Papierski had to come up and they needed a roster spot. So Luke Williams got lost in the roster crunch there. And so we'll always have that double he hit against somebody on the Padres back on Manoa on the Padres to win a game back in April. But
that's right.
Little known Nick, Luke Williams. See, I forgot his first name already. Luke Williams was designated. And then when Brandon Belt got put on the DL, that's when Kevin Padlo showed up again, which is kind of a new thing. And then had you ever heard of the Stuart Fairchild guy?
I'd
when Austin Slater went on the, go ahead.
No, I'd seen him in transactions, but I didn't know anything about him. Yeah.
I saw him on the field. I'm like, who is this? I missed the transaction during the day. So Stuart Fairchild, an outfielder, replaced Austin Slater because I assume he's a right-handed hitting outfielder. And then after Padlo's disastrous top of the eighth inning last night, they sent him back down, and Donovan Walton played today's game for the Giants as a shortstop to give Crawford the day off. So, like, they're literally making moves every single day just to cover somebody who went down over the past week, which is not what you want to be doing heading into the next, you know, it's only the second month of the season. There's a ton of baseball left to be played. So you want to get the guys healthy, but it's been a huge revolving door so far.
No, and guys like Walton and Padlo and Papierski and all these guys, I mean, he burns through their options so fast. And I think that's why, and Luke Williams, right? They have to be designated for assignment because they just run out of options or they have a roster crunch. And it's like, they're very temporary. They're like disposable players in a way. You know what I mean? They're like good enough to serve for a couple of games. And then they're bounced up and down 3 or 4 times. And they're like, sorry, we don't have any more room for you. Bye.
I think that they look to catch lightning in a bottle like they did with Wade and like they seem to have with Luis Gonzalez as well.
Too,
I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Yaz is probably the original best example of Farhan catching that lightning.
Yep.
Because like you look at a guy like Gonzalez this year, apparently he's leading rookies in hits in the National League. He's like second in RBIs or something like that. So he could even be considered for Rookie of the Year. And we're like, we didn't know Luis Gonzalez was on the Giants 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, maybe.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, and let's go ahead and talk about it. I mean, you know, he was doing really well. He was going to maybe finish the year with a 0 ERA until the other performance from 2 nights ago. But yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, we saw Albert Pujols pitch and Luis Gonzalez did it earlier this year. But then this week he did it 2 games in a row. And look, the way Gabe Kapler kind of described it as like, I know it's not fun. I mean, it's fun once in a while. 2 nights in a row isn't fun. But the secondary aspect of it is saving the bullpen. It still saves the bullpen, and that's his motivation. It's like, even if it's one inning, it saves the bullpen. So he's going to continue to do it. And he was a pitcher at where was it? Arizona State or something like that. I can't remember. But he was a pitcher in college. And then Gabe Kapler says he loves the differing look from the mid-40s Ephus to the mid-80s fastball. So, I mean, you know, and hell, that last appearance he had, he got the first two guys out. And then they strung a bunch of hits together, and he ended up giving up three that inning. So he actually has an ERA now. But, you know, as a Giants fan, though, Eric, you just – it just makes you kind of feel sick after you see it two nights in a row. You're just like, ugh, this isn't cool, man.
No, Gabe, like, it's not even that he burned out the bullpen. It's just, well, he kind of burned out the bullpen. It's disheartening because you know how badly the team's getting beaten if that scenario is there, too.
Yeah.
It's just such a kick in the teeth. And I had no idea he had pitched before. His baseball reference page now lists him as an outfielder slash pitcher. It has his pitching stats on his baseball reference page.
That's amazing.
It's so funny. He's only walked one guy in 4 1/3 inning. And, I mean, 5 hits in 4 1/3, not bad. He's faced 20 batters over, 4, 12, 13. So 13 outs, 20 batters, that's pretty good, you know, that's for somebody who didn't expect to ever pitch in the big leagues. So while it is fun once in a while, I hate seeing it. I don't want to see it again. If we don't have to this year, I'm sure we'll see it two or three more times. I think this is just the way it goes now. Pretty much going to what you were just saying with the Giants looking at these guys as replaceable parts, because they look at these guys as replaceable parts, they kind of use them up when they use them. And so if they need to throw a guy like Gonzalez out there every now and then to mop it up, that's what they do. And Chad, I don't know. I kind of get tired of seeing it after a while. I think it's fun. And I think the next time it happens, Brandon Belt should finally get his chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on. We got to put him out there. I mean, Panda do it, right?
We got to get earned it. He's been in the league like 11 years.
By the way, Luis Gonzalez did play for New Mexico in college from 2015 to 17. He actually threw 127 innings in college. Wow. Now, his stats weren't that great. 6.13 ERA, 174 hits in those 127. So his hits per nine was 12.3. So, yeah, not the best stats, but, you know, he's got the experience at least. I mean, 127 innings of college pitching. I mean, so he can use that. He can tap into that on the mound. And now, like you said, he's got those four innings, 4 1/3 of major league experience. So,
you know, you mentioned the difference in his EFIS and his fastball. I mean, it's like a 45 mile an hour difference between those two pitches, because he humps it up there like 86. So,
yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Not bad at all. All righty then. Well, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can bring up some highlights of the week. I think you know where I'm going to go on this one.
I hope so. It's so funny that Jock Peterson was such a hated rival. I mean, he wasn't hated. I love that he and Crawford are like best friends. I mean,
I know. It was so much fun.
Great picture of them meeting in midair yesterday after the walk-off. That was just so fun.
All right. So this is all about Jocktober and May. So we're going to go ahead and play you all of his home runs in the last couple of days. Here's home run number one last night.
High drive.
Again, inside.
Right field. It is out of here. Home run number eight. He could lay in the weeds, can he?
Well, and one thing about him I really appreciate now that we've had a chance to see him.
That was nice. Like you said, he's turning – that was an off-speed there that tailed back over the heart of the plate. But he's hit a couple that were high and tight, and he's doing what you said, like kind of like Barry Bonds. He doesn't choke up on the bat, but you see him throw and open up his hips real early to expose more barrel to that inside pitch, and he's turning on it. I don't know. He's just seeing it early. He's like recognizing the location early, and he's just hammering it. It's something that I know I could never do. I mean, whenever I had a hurler on the mound, of course they were never throwing 98 back when I was playing. But whoever was the fastest in the league, if they threw me a high and tight fastball, but it was in the zone, man, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's where I get chopped off if it's two strikes and I'm trying to protect. Yeah, it's just like, oh, way up on the fist, right? And he's just getting those hips open so early so he can get that barrel and pull it down the line. But here's home run number two, putting them up 8-2.
Hit into center field. Nimmo back at the wall. Out of here. He's done it again.
He knew it. He dropped ahead and never took a step.
And that was a two-seamer tailing away, but that was nice because he hit it to dead center, and that was even over the original center field wall. So that was a big boy home run for sure. And then we get down to the bottom of the eighth with two outs. The Giants now trailing 11-8, his third home run of the night. Oh, so pretty.
98 in his hands. You mentioned the hip thing. I wonder if that's what he and Bonds talked about, because Bonds was just so notorious at getting to that pitch. And you got to think, because when you open your hips up early, your hands have to follow in the same direction.
Yeah.
So it's easier to get to that inside pitch and pull your hands in.
Then the Giants found themselves down 12-11, and as we talked about at the top of the show, the Giants had two outs and no one on, put two guys on via walk and hit. Then the man that Gabe Kapler just wanted to get back to here in the bottom of the ninth with two outs and a 1-1 count delivered the game-tying single.
On the center field and a base hit. Here comes the tying run.
City Connect magic. I don't know what to say.
Respect the City Connect.
Respect the City Connect. And it's not all about Jock. Right after that, you had Brandon Crawford. And then, of course, Darren Ruff trying to unhitch the trailer and just getting in under the tag to win the game.
On the ground. Here comes Ruff. We got to play at the plate. Can't a throw. It is. Not in time. This one is over.
See if you can see. Bam. Right at the oil for the strength screen.
What a crazy ball game. Oh, my God. And then I got to play this last one. This happened earlier today. First inning, Giants already up 3-0 in the first. This is his fourth home run in seven at-bats. Eric, I think I hit four home runs in 7 years of amateur ball, so here we go.
I didn't.
Drive to right. Hit well. Did he do it again?
Look at that. Another high and tight fastball. You opened up those hips. Look at that. Look how open they are.
No wonder the talk with Barry did something to him. Because seriously, that's what Barry is notorious for. So I really got to wonder if Jock's been getting beat on those inside fastballs for the last – I'd love to go back and look the last few weeks, see if he's been getting beat on those fastballs like that, because somehow, some way, he finally figured out a way to get to him.
Oh, my God. That is just – he's pretty. I mean, he doesn't quite have a Will Clark or Ken Griffey swing, but a lot of lefties have pretty swings. He's got a decent. It's above average, I would say. It's not too bad.
And his has like a thump to it too. You know what I mean? Because he's like a guy that swings a club. He doesn't swing a bat. He swings a club.
Yeah. He's putting his tree trunk legs into that. He's a big boy. Yeah. Sometimes he doesn't look that big on TV, and then you see him standing next to other players, and you're like, oh, he. He eats steak and potatoes. He's a country boy. He's country strong, even though he grew up in Palo Alto. So crap, man. Highlights of the week. That'll do it for that. Who's hot? Who's hotter? I guess Trevor Story's up there as well as far as across the league. Trevor Story's had a nice little streak as well. But, I mean, it's him and Jock Peterson who are hot right now. If you look across the rest of the Giants last week or so, you mentioned it. Yaz is like 7 for his last 17 with a bomb. Slater won the IL. He was only 2 for 6. And everybody else is kind of like, Luis Gonzalez, 5 for 17. Obviously, Longo with 2 bombs today. He's now 5 for his last 17, so close to 300. But again, no one nearly as hot as Jock Peterson. Everybody's just very, very pedestrian, I guess you can call it.
Yeah, Yaz is hitting 500 on balls in play. His batting average on balls in play over the last week was 500. So
damn.
When he connects, he's getting on base lately.
Yeah, and as far as pitching over the last week, I mean, everybody's allowed runs. The only one that really hasn't was Jarlene Garcia, He's got three innings and no runs. Everybody else has allowed at least an earned run or two. It's across the board. Rogers, Gonzalez, of course. We just talked about him. Duvall, Littell, Brebbia, Alvarez, Lavera, Wood, Leon, Webb, Rodon, Junis, and Cobb have all given up runs this week. So no one had a shutout this week. It was really just Garcia, and that's it. So, yeah, Team Ira is a good.
Tip of the cap to Brebbia. I feel like he's done really well in securing a spot on the back end of the bullpen and not being a mop-up guy and not just being a one-out guy, because they're trusting him in the eighth and ninth inning right now with McGee out. So it's been nice to see Brebbia like come all the way back from the Tommy John and all the stuff with the Cardinals and to have some rocky times last year to really kind of being a solid contributor to the bullpen, one of the few solid contributors to the bullpen so far. What is he at? 2.7 ERA at 19 games, 20 innings pitched. So that's pretty good. So a little tip of the cap to John Brebbia for getting it done so far.
You are certainly allowed to have a honorable mention, but I think, you know, as far as player of the week, how can you not select Jock Peterson? But aside from that, you know, I will say Jacob Junis, which I've picked him twice already. This would be like, I mean, it's an honorable mention, but he's solidifying the back end of the rotation. And then, you know, we mentioned Yaz, who's had a pretty decent week. Then Longo today woke up with a couple of home runs. But I don't know, anyone else you wanted to mention that kind of stuck out to you?
Logan Webb, I think, pitched well in his last two appearances. He lost well, he didn't lose the game, but they lost that game at the end of that Colorado series last week, and he pitched really well in that game. And he pitched well last night in the crazy game. He just had a high pitch count, 92 pitches after five innings. That got him out of there. But yeah. I really feel like Logan Webb has kind of righted the ship a little bit. There's still that snap and that bite to his pitches, so I really like what I've seen from him lately. So Webb's been hot, too.
All right, well, before we wrap it up here, we always have our segment we like to bring back when the Giants are doing well. Why are we going to win it all? And yes, we're using the collective and the royal we. I know some people don't like that, but we're a podcast by and for fans of the Giants. Of course we're going to say we. We're always going to say we, even though we're supposed to be objective journalists, I guess. Journalist, I use that term very loosely. Yeah, as we're wearing hats and paraphernalia and stuff all over my walls. No, I'm going to say because of the expanded playoffs. I may have said that once before, but yeah, I mean, there's so much more time. Don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like, whoo, boy, this might be a three-horse race, and I don't know if the Giants are going to be able to keep up, especially if they struggle like this. This is their first month they've struggled. I mean, think about it. If they had a month, if their May last year was like this year's May, the Giants would not have won the West, right? No. So in a way, that tells you the only way the Giants are going to win the West is to win 600 ball every month the entire year. Well, that streak is over, guys. So unless they go like 27-3 in a month and make it up, it's going to be hard to catch the Dodgers. I got to admit, it's going to be hard. But with expanded playoffs, again, you get your foot in the door and you do what you did in 14. You sneak in as the 88-win team and work your way to game seven with the tying run on third and two outs, and you somehow pull it off. So, you know, I can see the Giants doing that again, having that little magic down the road, just getting your foot in the door.
All right. Well, I'm going to take the obvious. Jock Peterson is why Giants are going to win it all. Now, I did that 3 weeks ago, and I said I won't do it again because I was like, that's too easy. When he was hot last time, I picked
him. I know, but it shows you that he's had some good weeks, right?
I mean, what an impact this guy has had so far. I can't imagine Jock's going to want to leave. I mean, if he's happy, if his family's happy, why the hell wouldn't he take decent contracts to stick around for two, three, four more years with the Giants? Anyways, that'll be why they win it all next year as well. But
back-to-back, there we go.
Right. I'm going to say Mark Hallberg, the third base coach. Why? Because nobody ever mentions this freaking guy. And he's done pretty well with his sends and his holds so far that I've seen this season. He seems to have a really good read on when to send guys. Look at how close the rough play was last night. Rough was in. I mean, not close. It's in the point of he, you know, had the time to make the play. And he's willing to force the issue. And I think that's what I really like about him. Is he does have a tough stop sign sometimes, but it always seems to be in blowouts. If the Giants are in it and he thinks they have the edge, he's going to send the guy from what I've seen so far. and I kind of dig it. So I'll say Mark Hallberg, not Wahlberg. This ain't the Funky Bunch, as the reason the Giants will win it all. He's a quality third base coach. Now, it's not to take anything away from past third base coaches. I just like to give the guy a shout out because, I mean, we literally never hear his name.
Yeah, I completely forgot his name until you mentioned it. I said, oh, yeah, that's a third base coach. I'm always thinking of, you know, Tim Flannery or before, you know, way back in my youth, Wendell Kim. I always remember Wendell Kim.
Waving Wendell.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my God, Waving Wendell, man.
Well, today was the 9-year anniversary of when Pagan hit the inside the park home run to beat Colorado, and Flan came running down behind him in the back during that 2013 season, and then Pagan hurt himself.
Yeah,
the whole season went to crap after that, but that was a good send by a third base coach.
That
so
really
Hallberg is living up to the Flan name so far.
Cool. All right. Well, the Giants have a 10-game road trip starting on Friday. It's going to be, I'm not going to call it tough. Going on the road is always tough, but they got 3 in Cincinnati, 3 in Philadelphia, and then 4 in Miami. Obviously, all beatable teams. Philadelphia isn't too bad this year so far. But anytime you go on the road, it's not so good. But if you look up their road and home splits, the Giants are actually a little bit better on the road right now, I believe. So, you know, it is what it is.
We talked about it last year. When they go into these hitters' parks, they kind of go in like as the big bad Giants lately, and they knock the crap out of the ball. They did it in Colorado. They'll do it in a warm Cincinnati, a warm Philadelphia, and then what are they at? Miami. Granted, that's the dome, but I mean, I fully expect the Giants to be at least 6-4 on this road trip.
Yeah, 6-4 would be obviously a 6. You try to split on the road and win at home, but I think they really need to shoot for 6 because the Dodgers are probably going to win 7 or 8 out of their next 10. I mean, Jesus Christ, you know. Cincinnati, though, you know, they're one of the worst teams in the league, but, you know, Murph and Mac of the local KMBR station here had Kipe on a couple of days ago, and they were like, hey, you know, the Giants can get healthy going to Cincinnati and stuff like that. And Kipe's like, guys, you can't think that way. Cincinnati can come, you know, we can go into Cincinnati and they could roll over us. I mean, you know, a couple of good pitchers and a couple of good streaks. We make a few errors and suddenly the Reds take 2 out of 3 or sweep. You cannot, and players can never go into another city thinking, oh, we got these guys. Like, just, you can't do that. You fall into that trap. And it's true. I mean, you know, the Giants sometimes lay an egg against, you know, under 500 teams. I will say, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but their record against under 500 teams is significantly above 500, and their record against winning teams is significantly below 500. So that is bearing true so far.
Like 7-14 or something against, or I guess now 8-14 after today's game against the winning teams.
Yeah.
So they are beating up on the bad ones. I was going to see how they did. Didn't they beat the crap out of Cincinnati last season too, though?
I don't recall. Just off. I mean, they beat up on most people last year with 100.
Yeah, they went
wins.
6-1 against the Reds last year.
Mm-hmm.
Scored 43 runs against the Reds in 7 games.
Yeah. I mean, it looks good on paper, and hopefully they should take 2 out of 3, no problem. But again, like Kipe said, it's baseball also. Baseball, anything happens. It's like just crazy shit happens. So it's going to be a tough road trip, but, you know.
We talk, I mean, yeah. Oh, they scored 19 runs in Cincinnati last year, though, on that YouTube game, Thursday, May 20th, almost a year ago. So hopefully
all right, well, that's going to do it for episode 150 or 253. Hopefully, we're back on Monday. It is Memorial Day. I believe we're going to be able to record, but it would only be 3 games we're talking about. So we might push it off, so just keep your awareness on social media, and we'll let you know the schedule. But you can follow us on social media, on Twitter, at TortureCast. Like us on Facebook by that same name, TortureCast, or check out TortureCast.com. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits for Eric. That's with the number 2. And Willie Dills had a pool tournament where was he? Waco or El Paso or something? But you can follow him at Willie Dills. And, of course, he's moving back to San Francisco in late June or July, so he's going to be able to join us more often and even cover some games as he's going to be living close to Oracle Park, which will be kind of cool to get some more coverage.
Maybe he's the difference. Maybe Willie living in San Francisco is what the Giants needed last year, and they didn't have it. So maybe him coming back home will put them over that hump, and they can win that World Series this year. So, Willie, if you listen to this show, I'll know if you did, if you hear this, it's going to be because Willie comes back. That should have been my why we'll win it all. Damn it, I totally screwed that one up.
Yeah, and he used to have his rally sloppy joes.
That's all I was thinking of when I was saying.
Yeah, So he's going to have to find a substitute. I don't know if he has a substitute right now because that was it. I believe those – yeah, those are the Sloppy Joes at Zeke's, which no longer exists. Zeke's, yeah.
He's going to track down a man named Zeke and then pay him to make him Sloppy make me Joes. Sloppy Joes.
Oh, my God, yeah. No, I had a great time, obviously, covering games with Willie and even going to his apartment way back in the day watching the Giants playoffs in 2012 and 14. So, yeah, maybe we'll get some of that magic back with him moving back. But, yeah, look for us to record next week sometime. I'm not sure exactly when, but we should be streaming it on Facebook. Of course, you can find your podcast, our podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Eric, you have anything else to mention?
Same old Giants chatter on Facebook if you want a decent community to talk Giants baseball. Nobody really sugarcoats it there. We are pretty positive, though, because we all kind of know how good the Giants are.
Yeah.
So if you think the Giants are good, come talk Giants ball with us. You know, feel free to pick up apart when things are going bad because we have absolutely flamed some of Kapler's moves lately. But, you know, if you just want to see other knowledgeable Giants fans on Facebook, join us. I have a weekly show, Coffee in the Cove, on Giants chatter on Facebook. I won't be doing it this week because the Giants play at 8:30 in the morning on Sunday. Have you noticed this yet?
No,
they play at 8:30 in the morning on Sunday. It's ridiculous. It's 11:30 a.m. in Cincinnati. Why are we starting a game before noon?
Is it like a holiday or something in the air in Ohio? Is there something going on?
It's Peacock. Peacock has been getting games on Sundays, and they've been starting them at 11:30, so I guess they can get the audience before the other games get started. So while we get to see Ahmed Fareed for the first time in a long time hosting the pregame show on the Peacock it's an 8:30 in the morning game. So there's no way in hell I'm doing Coffee in the Cove this Sunday because I'm not sure I'll even be awake for the beginning of the Giants game. But tune in every Sunday after that for a rotating cast of characters just talking not just Giants baseball, baseball in general, whatever comes up. Like last week, we went down a deep rabbit hole of Joe Panic games, and we were watching highlights of some guy diving into the water from a midseason game in 2017. You know what I mean? So it can go any direction at any time. It's one of our most fun unscripted shows we're doing.
Hey, maybe you can go after the game and call it like Campari in the Cove or or Coors in the Cove, or I don't know, something like that. Pick an alcoholic drink.
Omelets from Ohio. I mean,
oh my God.
Because they'll be in Cincinnati, so Ohio, you know.
There you go. That'll work. All right. Well, that'll do it for episode 253. We'll see you sometime next week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, something like that, for episode 254. Until then, have a fantastic Memorial Day weekend. It's the start, the kickoff of summer. Go barbecue. Go stay cool. Have some fun. Stay safe. And we will see you next week. Abu.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.